You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast. I've been waiting for this one because you've been talking about it forever. And it's a name that a lot of people probably know, but more don't. Because Johnny Klump was kind of, I don't want to say an unsung hero, but I mean a real big influence and excellent lion hunter.
Oh, the guy was, you know, he's famous in our neck of the woods and down in southern Arizona. And he's something else. We got to go down and we spent a 4 days, I think, with him the first time just hunting. And I got to sit down and talk to him a little bit, and I recorded it. And that episode is on my YouTube channel. And I did a thing. It's called Cowboys or something, because, man, they're the real deal. They're cowboys. They're from down
working
there.
Working cowboys.
Working cowboys. They run cows for a living, and that's what they do. And the whole family, he's got 6 sons, and said he wanted 7, but something, it didn't work out. but anyway, he's fun to talk to, and hunting with him was amazing to watch the rapport that he has with his hounds. He's got a unique voice, and he's real soft spoken. And the dogs really, it's amazing, really. And I just got through talking to Tony Rivera. Have you heard of Tony?
I have.
Jaguar hunter down in Mexico.
Yep.
And me and Cody Cody's going to go down there and do something with him, I think. And then I'm trying to do something with him. And He got to talking. He seen my video on John Klump, and he got to talking about how good the dogs were that he had bought from John.
Really?
And I can see it. So
it's always cool, and I've always been envious of you guys, especially, you know, hunting horseback or off a mule, because it's almost like you're more engaged with those dogs all the time. You know, like for us, I put them out in front of the truck, run them down the road. I might be watching them all the time, but they're not necessarily paying a whole lot of attention. They know if they go out of the headlights, slow down, and I catch up. You know, I teach them to stay there. But watching guys that hunt like you do down there, it is really crazy the connection they have with the dogs, the handle they have on those dogs. And it's like they almost got an accelerated course in the English language. You know, those dogs know everything. Mm. And I know John, he's been hunting. When did he start? It was way back.
Oh, when he was just a kid. And he talks about it here in the interview that when he first started, I think his dad had a couple dogs. And he said, they didn't catch nothing. He said, matter of fact, he said he wrote when they asked him in second grade, third grade, or whenever it was, what he wanted to do. He said, one thing I knew I didn't want to do was hunt.
And look
or
at
hunt
him
with
now.
Dogs. He said, I don't want anything to do with dogs. And but then, you know, what happened? So. And then, you know, the neat thing about this is he caught a jaguar in 1986.
Yeah.
So, and he tells that story. Now, there's a lot of controversy about it and everything, but
that makes for good stories.
Yeah, it wasn't illegal. It was not illegal in 1986. They weren't even considered anything, you know, just and it was killing his calves. So
that's so finally, crazy.
It's a neat story. Well, so I hope everybody likes it. Oh, and we were talking earlier. I got off the phone. I was talking to Inukchuk,
yeah,
the dog food company. So maybe Inukchuk's going to help me get some things going here. So
keep you on the road.
Well, yeah. And so, Cody King's the one who I'd never heard of Inukchuk before. And Cody King I was talking to Cody and he said he started feeding it. And he said, man, that's the best dog food he's ever fed.
Really?
And if you clean pens,
you know
what good dog food is.
Yeah, that's. I think houndsmen spend more time talking about dog turds than about anybody on the planet.
Little dry hard dog turd.
Little dry black dog turds.
That's what you're looking for.
No, I've heard that a lot. I know Heath. You know he's big on them too. I think I'm gonna give it a shot and try it out, but. That'll be good. Get you some sponsors and get you back on the road. And because you've got a couple more coming up too, right? We got the Warner Glenn.
Yes. Warner Glenn, Joel Garnett. We got our little lives. If you guys are going to put those up there, you know, we had Jeff Allen on there. I had another deal with Mike Leonard. He came on. Who else do we have? Of course, Benny Griffin, you know, he's an Arizona lion hunter and he's on our deal most every night. He's a little grumpy sometimes, but he's on there every night. And of course, Chris helps me out. And, Chris also has his own little deal on Wednesday night where he interviews guys. He probably does a lot better job than I do.
And, he does good interviews.
He does good interviews. He's just not as entertaining as I am.
He's not as good to look at.
Yeah, that's it. That's why all the women tune in to mine.
Well, but, you should plug that because I know a lot of our listeners know Brett from Born 100 Years Too Late, but all of this stuff, you're releasing the videos on your other channel, Interviews, Stories, and Tales on YouTube.
Exactly. Yeah, those come out on... I guess, I don't know what the sequence will be. I'll give you guys the audio and you release the podcast. And then maybe in a week, I'll release the video portion of it. If you want to look at what John Klump looks like or what I look like or what Benny joined me for this one. So Benny was there too. And,
oh, great.
And he did a little talking too. So we were both down there hunting with him. So it was pretty cool.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I know you've been talking this one up for a long time. And it's like you said, he's kind of like the unknown Warner Glenn. Like, you know, he is local legend.
He is. He's a unique individual. He's a cowboy. I mean, straight up cowboy. I mean, I liked it. I enjoyed it. And they were real good to me. I mean, treated me real good.
That's awesome. So everybody, if you like the interview, make sure to check out Brett's YouTube channel, Interviews, Stories, and Tales. A week, 2 weeks after this launches, and you guys will be able to see some more content. And then we'll
get you. And if you're looking for other content, you know, look up Chris. It's Anecdote of a Houndsman or something like that. I figure I'd give him a plug because he does. He helps me a lot.
Oh, he's a staple on the Monday Night Lives, which, you know, we've been holding off on launching this until we had this one ready to go.
Yeah.
But going forward, you know, we're trying to structure this to where we've got some interviews, and then we're going to sprinkle in some of your live videos for people that might not be on YouTube. They can just plug it in and listen. And they're real casual conversations. You never know where Brett's going to go. So I didn't,
the lives are just, that out. The lives are just all over the place, but I don't know. We go down rabbit holes and we talk about everything from Bigfoot to aliens to hounds and lion hunting. I mean, and how grumpy. Now I forget his name.
Oh, man.
But anyway, yeah, it's Benny. Benny Griffin. Benny, how could I forget Benny?
The Lorax.
The Lorax, exactly. And you, Jason, you've joined us a few times.
I did. And I plan on on there again when I can get a free Monday night.
It might be this Monday night.
It might be.
We just got a lot of times. We just have like an open mic. I had George on there for the Bear Hunter out of Virginia, and who else? I've had a few people on there. When we just get on there and talk for a little while, and then sometimes they have to go and get off, and we all. Man, sometimes those things will last 3 hours.
I know. That's what I remember when you said something. That's... I said, I can come on. I can't stay 3 hours.
No, that's why we have people come on and they go off. And it's just like a bunch of guys sitting around the campfire really talking is what it amounts to.
No, I think it's really cool.
There might be a few lies trickled in there from time to time, too.
Tall tales, not lies.
Right? There you go.
Tall tales.
Well, yeah.
Well, so. Anything else you got to say about Johnny, or is he just, he needs no more introduction?
No, you'll see it. I mean, we go through, you know, his story. It's pretty neat. He's the real deal. I mean, the story about the Jaguar is pretty interesting, really.
Anything with a Jaguar is interesting.
Oh, a Jaguar caught in the United States. Shoot, yeah.
Yeah, you're on the list of about less than a handful of people that ever seen that.
I think, didn't Sewell Goodwin catch one?
I think he did catch one.
In a cave hole, and of course, Warner Glenn.
Yep.
And I've heard rumors, so.
Well, I hope everybody enjoys. We're looking forward to it, and we'll get you back on the road for some more.
Perfect. Oh, and if you decide to get a nunchuck dog food, they're not sponsoring me yet, but if you decide to get it, tell them that you heard about it from us.
Yeah, definitely.
Then they might call me up and say, hey, we're going to send you a truckload of dog food.
Have it stop by the W shop on the way back down. Well, so awesome, cool. Brett. We're looking forward to it and many more to come.
Perfect. Thank you, Jason.
You bet.
Tell Buddy I said thank you.
Oh, well.
This is kind of hard for a bunch of cowboys, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We're not used to it. We'll have to practice.
All right. Here with Mr. John Klump and Vinny Griffin. John, we've been down here with John for a couple days, and I've been wanting to interview John for a long time. We came down here one time before and spent a couple days, and 3 days, 4 days.
Four days.
And really never got to... Never had the opportunity to sit down and record his story. So tell us about the Klumps. Where did the Klumps come from and how'd they get here?
Our family came out of New Mexico. I guess my great-grandpa, it was during the Depression and stuff, and they were having a lot of trouble paying their helper and stuff, and the cattle weren't worth anything. But then my great-grandpa thought they didn't know what shingles were then, but he'd been told that he could go to San Simo. There's San Simo Seneca by the south of San Simo, between San Simo and Portal. So he wanted to get to go there, so they ended up telling the cowboys and the people who worked for them, they were partners with Keeney's, and the Keeney's are still in the same country, but I think they separated the same as my great-grandpa. And then my great-grandpa came over to San Simo. He wanted to get to that Seneca water is what they was telling us about, telling us to get in that and make it feel better. So, and he probably had shingles just because after, you know, having problems paying your help and having a lot of cattle and stress. So it probably was shingles. But anyway, so he brought like a couple hundred head of cattle with him when he left New Mexico. So then he came over there to by San Simon, by the Seneca, and then he tried to just like probably just homestead or make a camp or something, however he could do it. But the problem was he went there, and then the cows would always try to go home because they were from New Mexico. They had a lot of that country bound reserve and stuff, and the cattle was from New Mexico, so they was always trying to go home. So then I guess after he was there for a while and he tried the water, but I don't know how good it did and all that stuff.
So that water over there was supposed to have some healing agents in it or something?
Yeah, but it's a Seneca. It was a Seneca just where the water just wouldn't leave, you know, and it most of the time it gets real salty. And a lot of salt and a lot of just, it's just kind of nasty water probably. So they thought that that would make it feel better, and it probably did. It probably was better than nothing. But the problem, but once he was there for a while, the cattle kept trying to go back towards New Mexico. So that's how he got over there by the Dos Cabezas. He seen the mountains over there by the Dos Cabezas, and he thought if he could ever get on that west side of them, like around by Wilcox side, then they have to climb over that mountain to get back.
Oh, it'd be a natural barrier.
Yeah, a natural fence. Because it was when they didn't have fences in, you know. So they went ahead and thought, we'll just move around to Wilcox. So that's where they ended up. And that's how the family got started over by the Dos Cabezas.
And about what year was that?
I'm not real sure, but I think it was 1905 or 1901 or something. I'm not positive, but we've passed 100 years for living around Wilcox and stuff. So I think that we've been here like around Wilcox for like 105 or 110 years.
And always run cattle.
Yeah, and that's all they ever knew is how to run cattle.
Yeah. And that was before Arizona was even a state, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'll be dinged. So that was your great grandpa.
Yeah. And then my grandpa, he's the one that started with his family, and they started with six boys and a girl. Is what I think it is. I think there were six boys. He had six boys and one girl. And then they just started out pretty much, but with the family. And then that made my dad and his brothers was together. And then they started putting a ranch together.
So you were born there by Wilcox?
Yeah. I think I was born in Benson, I'm pretty sure. Some reason in Wilcox, they didn't have it. They weren't delivering babies or something. So they told them they always said that I was born in Benson.
Benson.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and y'all still ranching all this country, aren't you?
Yeah.
Running cows?
Yes. My dad and his brothers have split up now, so now we're just whatever each brother had was way kind of split it, and so now I've just been by myself and my kids, my family, since my dad died. He died in 2015.
Oh,
the last day of 2015.
Wasn't he the oldest of the brothers?
He had an older half-brother, but he's the oldest brother of the brothers that was together.
And you've got six boys, right?
Yes. But I would always told people before right when I was first married, I told him I was going to have seven boys. I wasn't planning to have seven. Until I was only planning to have two, because I thought two was good. But then when I got in a little trouble with the Game and Fish, I told the wife I had two little boys, and I told her, hey, we've got to do something different. I said, now that we're in trouble, I won't be able to hunt as much, you know, now. So I need to get one boy for every day of the week. So I was planning to have seven. But
what happened? What happened to the seventh one?
The seventh one, I didn't get him. What happened?
Wait, did you just get old and quit?
No, it wasn't altogether that. I didn't have it. I never had a whole bunch of quit in me. I always tried to get, like today, the rock. We was going to get it off the hill.
Yeah.
But so anyway, no, I didn't have a lot of quit in me. But what I did, I went with five. I had five of them. And then I thought, well, that's pretty close to seven. So it wasn't telling a big story. So then I did have the sixth one accidentally, or just had him. So then, yeah, so I had one, the sixth one. So then when I got to Safford, it's a Mormon town in Safford, and the nurses there, I said, hey, I said, if I was to have seven boys, one more, do you think for sure it'd be a boy? Because I said they'd give me trouble from now on if it was six boys and one girl. So the nurses said, no, you're safe. You'll be able to have another boy. But that time the sixth boy came, I kind of knew the wife, she had to do it like one of them cesareans, you know, on him. So then I said, I knew that she wasn't planning to have any more. She was thinking, no, I had a plenty. So then I got to the house, or I went ahead. When I got home, I couldn't sleep. For like a month straight, I'd sleep for like 5 minutes and then wake up. And I was, and then after about a month, I finally said six is just the right number. So I quit.
Kept you up at night.
Yeah, kept me up at night for a long time. But then I ended up with the six. And I'm real lucky. None of them, they're all still living.
They all grown and
All grown.
And most all of them run cattle too, or ranch?
Yeah, they're all helping me. They help with our ranches, and now we have probably four or five different ranches.
Oh, cool!
So we almost have everyone something that they for sure there's plenty for them to do, but they almost have one place of their own to take care of.
Oh, that's good.
Let me interject here. I've had the pleasure of knowing John's family, and every one of his boys has got so much good manners and respect, and they just treat people
real good, yeah.
Yeah, the way you'd want to be treated. And so, John, you've done a fabulous job, and some of your grandkids I've been around, they're just carrying on that trait of good-natured, good manners, and you guys are doing something right.
What do they say? It's the cowboy way.
It's cowboy way.
Okay. We'll have to tell them that the cowboys do it right.
What? Now we talk about the hounds.
Okay.
Did you have any? Was your grandpa or your dad or any of them run hounds?
No. My dad, he had a friend. I better tell you this real quick. He had a friend, and they always liked hounds. And so the two of them always had hounds, but they would like to go hunting. Like, either when it snowed, they'd try to go hunting, but they didn't hunt often enough to get their dogs to know what to look for.
Yeah.
So when I was in second grade, one of my teachers had us write down told all the kids, write down what you know for sure you don't want to do when you grow up. And so I wrote down, because my dad and his friend, their hounds never would catch anything. So... And a lot of times I wasn't very big, but I was probably like eight or so. And we'd find a fresh track, and you know it's fresh. You'd see it's real, real fresh. So they'd always send me to the house to get these dogs. And I'd go to the house and get the dogs, and we'd get up there, and I guarantee you, they'll just look up at you. They went. If you got there with them, sometimes they'd probably get a deer before you got to the place. But if you got there, they'd normally just look up at you and just wouldn't do anything. So on that note that little letter that I wrote, I was going to tell you, that second grade teacher, I still have the letter somewhere. I'd like to find it again, but it says that the only thing I know for sure I don't want to do is have dogs when I grow up. Because I said, man, them things aren't any good. They work me to death going and getting them and never have no fun. So so that's what I said when I was in second grade. So then it wasn't until like I was probably fifth or sixth grade. One of our teachers, there was a teacher, a superintendent who is he's a principal. He had a hound, and he said, John, he says, I got a hound that has some puppies. He says, you want some puppies? But then, by then, I'd almost could read the red fern grows, where the red fern grows.
Yeah, yeah.
So that messed me up. then I was thinking I was going to get some dogs, I said. But when I get the dogs, I said, I want to just chase everything I can chase that I can catch. So skunks was one of the... on the first of the list. And so I chased everything I could chase with these. I ended up getting, I got three from the school teacher, the principal teacher. He gave me three. I called one little Ann and one big Dan, you know.
Just like the red fern, yeah.
Yeah, I had to do that because I thought the red fern was a good story and all that. And so, anyway, so I named him. But I ended up, and the other ones I named Raleigh. I named one Raleigh out from the superintendent. And that one was, just, she was a black and tan, and she was long-legged. One of them was so short, it couldn't hardly crawl, you know. It was like, I don't know how one could come out short, one long-legged. But one couldn't hardly keep up at all. And then a snake bit the other one. So now I was down to one of them. And then a school teacher, he seen one of my dad's old hounds. And so he went and found a female. He had a female hound. And he said, let's breed them two dogs together. So I said, okay, oh, no problem with me. So I ended up getting one dog out of that dog, and that was old Sally. I call her Sally, and she's a walker dog. She's real pretty, like just looked like a pure walker. But then the third one I accidentally got was old Tommy Martin, the same friend as my dad. I told you that they had a hard time getting their dogs to catch anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dang, if he didn't go buy a dog, I thought he got it from old Marvin, probably.
Marvin Glenn.
I think he got the male dog, and it was a banjo dog. So the females that he had was an old man, John Forsyth, and he just lived in a little farm on the Kansas Settlement Road, real pretty close to Sandy's.
Yeah.
And anyway, they had... And he had bobcats. He would hunt bobcats. But he loved to hunt bobcats, and he caught quite a bit. But anyway, Tommy, his dogs were all inbred as could be because he's an old man and keep his own bloodlines and all that stuff. So Tommy Martin got that one dog called Banjo, and then he bred her, and I ended up with one little puppy. I thought, well, I better not get a whole bunch. I was thinking just three, you know. So I had Tyke. And that was a little walker female, but little female, and she's kind of mean. She would, anyone else get around her, she'd bite them if they try to get her. But she was nice to me, and I let her sit by me in the pickup and all that stuff. And one of my friends that I sold her to later, he said, I'm never going to let no dog of mine sit beside me in the truck, sit on the seat. But then it wasn't long after when I did sell her, he was letting her sit right beside him on the seat. He didn't bother him a bit. So that was the first, that's how I was started out.
When you had those dogs, did you ever catch a lion?
Oh, yeah. Right away. See, when I was, I was real close to like 14 or 15 when them three dogs started catching lion, and then once they started catching lion, I caught a few bobcats first, you know. And once I started catching bobcats, I chased a lot of fox too. So they were pretty good fox dogs. They was fast dogs. And so then after I'd caught a bobcat Once I'd caught a bobcat, then it wasn't long till I told my dad, hey, I think these dogs are ready to catch lion. So then it wasn't long till they started catching lion. And after they started catching lion, then we just kind of tell them not to chase the other stuff. And they was ready to quit anyway. They was just,
once they caught lion, they didn't want to chase anything else?
No, once they started catching lion, they just said, we don't want to chase nothing else. They didn't even want to chase a coding money if he was in a tree. So that was good.
Did it seem like there was a lot of lions back in those days?
Yes, quite a bit. See, one or two years, the most I ever caught was like 18 in one winter, you know. That was the best of my, I was young. I was probably about 17 or 18 when I was doing it. I was still in high school, probably like the last year or so in high school. That's when I caught the most.
Did you all dry ground? You catch some snow?
All kinds, but mainly just in the dry ground. But them days, it seemed like it snowed more than it does now. Yeah. So a lot of times in the school, they'd always say, John's going to be gone if it snows. Because I always thought I better have all the help I could get. So, yeah. So I did hunt quite at any time if it snowed. A lot of the time I'd go try to hunt in the snow too. But so quite a bit of them were in the snow, or a few of them were. But our country really doesn't have snow.
Okay, Benny.
We don't get as much snow as you think in the Dos Cabezas and stuff. That's kind of places that don't have much snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bobby, from when you started, did you have? I know you've had a lot of good dogs. Do you have one that just exceptional that you remember?
I probably take the one dog that the one of the first three, or that Tyke, that Walker female. Probably I'd say that she's probably the best dog that I ever owned. As far as always, she didn't let very much many get away. She'd get through the rocks real, real good. She's real, real quick, and she knew whenever you jumped them, she really did. She pushed them.
She'd make them.
But all three, the three that I had to start with, the first three, they're probably as good a dog as I had any three dogs at one time. They were as good, fancy dogs as you could get. The black female, she wouldn't open a lot, but, when she did open, she was rolling on.
She was not too far behind him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she won't be going. But if she starts opening, she's probably pretty close to him. But little Walker female, she barked a lot. She barked probably more than some people like them to bark. But she is going to bark just because she was wanting to let you know that she was still one of them guys to help her keep on going.
Of all the dogs that you, I mean, you sold quite a few dogs too, haven't you?
Yeah, I've sold a lot, but I don't know. I never could keep a track of how many I sold. I've sold, once I was hunting, when I was hunting a lot, I ended up selling dogs because I always thought I needed money. And so then I'd sell good dogs.
Yeah. When you went to get dogs, did you just get them anywhere?
No, later. After I started getting some dogs, we sort of started breeding them. Just whoever had good dogs that we liked, the dogs. That one dog, old Tyke, we ended up breeding that Tyke's daddy to quite a bit of our females and stuff. So we got some of that Banjo breeding in them. We didn't try to put pure Walker, though. Most of our dogs would be, my dogs would be kind of mixed up dogs. But
all hound or mixed up with?
No, I always had hounds. And the only time I ever had, when I had them good dogs, I had one cow dog, a Catahoula, that was real, real good. But I kept him just because I started, or I kept him because he was real, real good at catching bear. But then after he'd been with us when we caught lion too. So then he was real, real good at catching lion. He was real good when they jump him. And and then even when before, if the track kind of got good, you could always tell he was, you know, trailing it. And a lot of times he'd kind of find it before the other dogs because he would be in front and then find it.
Did you run a lot of bears too back in those days?
No, I never really ran many bear. We ran a few bear right there, kind of when I had the real good dogs and I was hunting a lot. We ran a few bear, but I never have run a lot of bear. I never ran bear until I had that one cow dog, and then I had another old hound that wouldn't cold trail good, but he was real, real tough. If he could get to a bear, he'd bite him.
And he'd
bite him, but he was kind of slow. He wasn't fast as a cow dog, but if he once a cow dog slowed him up, then the old dog could catch up. Or he was a slow type of dog, but he was a real gritty hound, you know.
Yeah,
he was real, real gritty hound for a hound. He wasn't scared. He would go ahead and try to get hold of them.
I noticed today. Have you always had dogs like that cougar and that yellow dog that, I mean, they scattered out in those bluffs. I mean, they were looking for something.
Yeah, that's what I was wanting. is dogs that will go in the rocks or go through the rocks faster than hounds. I've been killing the kids, but the red female, I didn't really plan on letting her go with the hounds, but she's supposed to be a Catahoula of some sort, but she doesn't really do good with the cows, so I thought she sort of likes to hunt. So that's why, and she's my buddy too, so I just like her really, really good. Or she likes me real good, so I thought, well, I better find a use for her. So I thought I'll just take her with the hounds.
So, yeah, they were out there looking. I mean, I'm used to just trail dogs that just stay trailing.
They crossed the canyon.
They crossed the canyon and was looking in those bluffs on the other side. Yeah. Cougars always out looking.
Yeah, but two days before, they let a lion that they knew they shouldn't have let get away, so they're trying to get.
They're trying to make up to you?
They're trying to make up to me. They want me to feed them good.
John, don't say that on this deal. Oh. You'll embarrass your dogs.
Okay.
I was there, and I understand.
Something I've noticed and I told Benny about, and I didn't tell you. But okay. Have you always had like a knack with your hounds? I mean, now I've heard it from several people.
I think
you were a good trainer. You're a great hound trainer.
I think I am good. Just on the show, I got one dog that's laying down, but it's not a hound. But I'll still call his name, and then we'll see if he comes when I call. I just get call him twice, okay?
Yep.
I can't tell if it's who or I got to see.
Who's this over here?
There's a little fuzzy female.
Which one's this one? Is that who? This is Coach. Here, Coach.
Ah.
See, I said Coach.
He was
one
laid
time.
Down asleep.
Yeah, but I told him, and that way you can tell which dog it is. Here, Coach, come on over here.
You can't tell him apart, can you?
No, here, Coach.
Oh, he don't want
to. He doesn't like to get in the smoke, but you can tell he's going to come anyway. See, I called him over, and so that's the way I try to keep my dogs so that they're pretty well minded, and they know their names.
You have
laid down here close to us.
You have an easy way of going with them.
Yeah, I normally don't like to hit them very often. I use a shocker on them some, but I'm pretty easy with that too, because I figure that, especially if they're not no trouble, there's one or two, or a few times that I finally have to shock them because I get tired of them keep doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
But most of the time, your dogs want to do right. It's just like a good horse. If you're riding a good horse, they want to do right. You just got to know what to show them, and they'll make them do right.
Yeah.
So that's why on my dogs, if I don't like something that they're doing, then I know it's because that I'm not doing it right to teach them.
It's your fault.
It's my fault that they don't know what's going on.
What are some faults in dogs that you just won't tolerate? I mean, besides fighting, we all know that.
Yeah, we don't like fighting. I don't really know exactly. There's most of the time, a lot of times, people are so scared that they think that they're not learning fast enough, and they think that they fall along or they don't have no ambition. But about 90% of the time, the dog doesn't really know, and it hasn't caught enough. Sure, some of them are real anxious as could be,
yeah.
But sometimes on them real slow learning ones are just the ones that want to be your buddy or don't know what's coming off and don't try to act like they really want to. Most of the time, you just leave them alone because they're not no problem. If they ain't causing you grief, what the heck is it going to hurt to let them tag along? So if you just leave them alone, tagging along, then it seems like every now and then there'll be the right day and it will just be like switch from dumb to good.
Yeah.
Right that one day. So that's why on the dogs, I've had dogs that other people have had, and I just like the looks of them, you know. And I'll say, hey, let me have that dog. I said, I like the looks of it. And they'll tell me, well, it got scared or something, or it's never going to be any good. And then most of the time, you'll be surprised, might be as good as there is.
Yeah.
And so, but. Like a lot of stuff is far, mainly what makes me the worst are just if you have a dog that you can see that he can't keep up, or he's something, you know, his feet go real crooked or something, where he's just not made.
Confirmation-wise,
yeah, confirmation. Yeah. If he's not, if you can tell he just can't do what you want him to do, that's the one problem with him. But if, as far as the dogs, most of the time, if the dog is a good dog, like he's all put together right,
oops, sorry,
you're probably okay, you know.
I noticed that you really have a good
rapport.
Yeah, it's just a good rapport with the dogs. I mean, you don't raise your voice hardly. You just talk to them, and they all listen, and it was really fun to watch. Now, what year did you catch the Jaguar?
I'm not real sure. I've been studying it, but I'm not positive. But I think it was 1987 or 88. I don't really remember that one. But 1987 or 88 is when it was.
Were you hunting a lot at that time?
Yeah, that's when I hunted. I was hunting a lot. I was hunting pretty much every day in the wintertime. If it was raining or something where you couldn't hunt, I didn't hunt. But I was hunting a lot then.
Yeah. Of course, you were running cows and you had calves and stuff. Yeah. That was probably why you hunted a lot.
Yeah, then I was just hunting a lot then because I didn't take any hunters. I didn't have really any people that I was hunting with too a lot. So I hunted a lot to keep the lions from eating the calves and stuff.
Yeah.
And I hunted the Dos Cabezas a lot because that's where most of our cattle were and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's how I got to hunt I hunted the Dos Cabezas a lot.
So tell us the story, the Jaguar. How did that come about?
You got
a picture somewhere, don't you? Do you have it with you?
Yeah, but I didn't have it because it was my mom. She had it in her house. So I didn't have it. And she wanted it back the other day. I wanted to get a picture. I brought it to show it to you.
Yeah.
But then I took it home and then I took it back to my mom. She is worried I wasn't going to bring it back to her. But that's where it is.
Well, tell us the story. How did that day, or had you been hunting several days?
It started out a lot. It probably started out like 3 or 4 months at least before that. Because one time I can remember, I was over there in Immigrant Canyon. That's close to our house, just south of the house in the Chiricahuas. And there was a calf killed, it was a pretty good sized calf. And we thought, well, we can catch this one. And our dogs was good. And we had them, they were in shape and they were good dogs. So we thought we could catch it, but we didn't know what it was. We just thought it was a mountain lion. And so we chased it that day and it ended up getting away. Our dogs went almost to Wonderland of Rocks before we got, and that's a long ways away. So before we got them stopped, or they just give out, and then we went in and went home. And I had an old friend that hunted with me a lot, old Bruce Bull. He's in that picture with the Jaguar, and he hunted with me a lot. He was my friend, but he was older. He was like about 75, and he hunted with me a lot, and I went and told him. I said, "Hey, Bruce." But then I chased him like 2 or 3 times out of that country and off of that calf. And every single time, it would get away. And I told Bruce, I said, "Man," I said, "that lion can run like crazy." I said, "I can't stop it." So he told me, well, and that's the first thing he said. And he'd been to Mexico once or twice to hunt jaguar. And first thing he said, I can guarantee it isn't a jaguar. That's all he said.
It isn't.
He said, "I can guarantee it isn't a jaguar." And all I told him, well, I don't know what it is, but I said it can really run fast because I said I can't catch it. So then it just kept going along for quite a while. We ended up chasing him like, I bet I've chased him probably 6 or 8, maybe in 10 times before.
In a period of how long?
About 3 or 4 months, probably.
3 or 4 months.
Yeah, probably 3 or 4 months.
And every time you cut his track, was it on a cat, or you found him? Was he killing a calf?
Not every time, but a lot of the time I'd find calves where he had killed them.
Did he cover them up like a lion?
Yeah, he covered them up just like a lion. You couldn't tell by the covering it up. You might be able to if you really know what you're looking for. Someone said that, I don't know, they say when a jaguar scratches, that makes that scratch, if it's a tom, he'll bite the limb by the trail. And if you see them limbs bit off, then it's a good chance it's a jaguar. But as far as like all this stuff before, I never had no idea. And I'd seen his track in the snow, and I'd seen, you know, but I didn't know, have any idea it was a jaguar. Because one reason is because old Bruce would tell me, no, I can tell you one thing, it's not a jaguar. So I didn't.
But you had your suspicions that it might be.
No, I didn't. I really didn't know what it was. I just told him, I don't know what it is, but I said, this guy can run. That's all I can, that's all I know for sure. I said, he can run. So anyway, then when we finally did catch it, then there was one guy, old John Kibler. He's been.
Hey, I seen your picture in his book.
Yeah. So anyway, he was with us, and he'd been with me like two or three days before, and we chased the jaguar probably, but we didn't know what it was. And so two or three days before, John, he was with us, and we chased him, but ended up dogs give out, and then we just have to go pick up the dogs as they were giving out. So then the day that I went, yeah, I told him, hey, I'm going to go back, because I said it was like one night, we missed one night. So I said, I bet you he'll be there. So I told him, I'm going back. He said, well, I'm not going to go with you today. So I said, okay, well, I'll go by myself. So I went up there, and sure enough, I was on a big ridge. There's a big ridge up there, and it's called like Whim Ridge or No Man's Land on the side where the spring is. No Man's Land Spring. So I was up on that big ridge, and they started trailing. I found a track where we was going right, and went off towards the canyon.
Notice any difference?
No, I didn't know. I wasn't thinking, you know, to look for anything.
You just seen a big track.
So I just seen it was a big track, and I knew I was going the right way. So then when it went off that ridge, going off towards the bottom of the canyon, there's like a little spring down there. It's called No Man's Land. I got off, and I had a pistol, but I got off, and before I got down very far, I could hear the dogs like barking right at it, because you could hear it like scuffling a little bit. And then the dog, before I could get down there, then it would just ran off, you know. And then it ran around the hill right below me, but I couldn't see it. There was a lot of trees and stuff. So, but I know it went that way just because the dogs went right below me, close by. And then I went around to the ridge, to the top of the ridge, and there was another hill that was straight, and it was kind of open, going up to the top of the hill. And I looked the whole way up. I never did see it. I never could see it, but I know good and well he had to have been going up that hill. And the dogs, they were going fast there. They were running pretty fast. So it takes a little while to get up with the horse. So when I got up, going up the hill, then I thought, man, and I could tell I hadn't caught him yet. He's still going up, outrunning us again. So I told him, when I got to the top of the hill, I called my little sister, Marie, and I told her, hey, I said, I got a couple young dogs in the pen that isn't run down. And I said, and she had a couple dogs that she has for her own. So I said, bring them two young dogs and bring whatever dogs that's walking. And then I told her that it was going towards like a road. There's a road above Masonic. It goes up the canyon quite a ways, just like a four-wheeler road. I said, it's going towards that road. And I said, get everything ready and then come and meet me there. So it wasn't real late. It was probably 10 o'clock when we jumped him. And by then, it was getting probably maybe 11 or now it's probably 12 at least. And so then she said, okay, I'll start coming. But we still had a ways to go. But by the time we was going from the ridge when they topped out, they were just going almost where you could just walk and trot to keep up. So the dogs were already running like tired, where they just, You could just walk and trot with a horse, you know, and you're keeping up. So then whenever it was about, it must have been close to 4 o'clock because then it was wintertime, so the sun goes down quick. And it was getting close to 4. My little sister came, and I guarantee it couldn't have met in a better place. Just as the dogs was coming off the ridge, she was just coming up the road. So then her dogs just fell in with them old, or my dogs, and they were all tired. So then they started out the other side of the hill, canyon, and there was a whole mess of javelinas. I said, man, I said, look at all them javelinas. I said, that would probably mess up our young dogs. I said, they'll probably go bark at them. So anyway, somehow or other, I told my sister, man, and my horse was so tired, I was tired, and my dogs were real tired. So I told my little sister, I said, if you want to, I said, let's just, if they chase the pigs, I said, we'll do, you know, we're beat up. So I said, we won't be able to do it. So I said, if they don't chase the pig, we're going on. So she said, okay. But she had a fresher horse than I did. Mine, but it was a good horse. So I had a real, real good horse that was real tough. He would keep on going, but he sure would slow down. So anyway, the dogs went right past the pig somehow. They went right through the middle of them. And then not a single one chased the pig. They stayed right on the track. So then as they started climbing right towards the top of the Government's Peak. There's a peak that's just straight, real, real high little peak. And they just started climbing straight to the top of that little peak. And then dang if they didn't, they just stayed going straight up it. And then them younger dogs started leaving our older dogs behind. And so then as we go up the hill, there's a ridge that you can get up. So I just stayed on that ridge. As we went up, some of them older dogs would give out. And so I'd just call them over to us to just let them follow the horse. And then when we got to the top of the hill, just right on the top of Government's Peak, I told my little sister, I said, man, I said, my feet's wet. And I said, I need to build a fire. I said, you go over the top of this hill and see if you can listen for the dogs. And so she said, okay. So I built a bear grass fire to get my feet warmed up and kind of get my pants to dry a little bit. And then when she did that, wasn't long before she come back and said, hey, I can hear them. They sound like they finally got them. And so then I stayed a little bit to get warm. And then I got on top of that hill. And it was like whenever you think it's so far away that you couldn't, no way possible to hear them, you could still hear them. It was just a straight shot. And it was night time then. It was probably 8 o'clock and moon was already coming up. So then you could hear them. And you could say, hey, them dogs have got them. So then I told my little sister, I said, man, I said, we finally got him. So I was pretty happy, and I knew to go down a ridge that had a fence on it, and I knew that I could get all the way down off that ridge. So we just got along the fence and stayed on the fence, and then we went ahead and went over to where the dogs were barking, and there was just like a small cedar tree, not real big one, about like not maybe just a little bit bigger, taller than your head, but it was a small one. And they were barking right under that cedar tree, just running around barking right there. And so I told my little sister, we had a real cheap little flashlight. Them light days, if they even had a light, you thought you had a good one, you know. So we had a cheapest little flashlight you can get. I can still remember a little plastic one, kind of flat looking thing. And you had a little button you push forward. So I told my little sister, I said, hey, I said, you get this light here. And then as soon as you turn it on, I said, I'm going to shoot it. Because I said, we can't afford to chase it any longer. So we got to go over there pretty close, probably maybe 20 foot from it, or probably close to 20 foot. And she turned on the light, and that son of a gun just put his head back, like real quick, like looked right at the light. And I told him, jeez, that's a jaguar. Then I knew it was a jaguar. But until then, I didn't have no idea what it was. And all I knew is it kept eating our calves, and it could really run fast. And I even had dogs that could run, too, them days. But sometimes they probably, like catahoula, like you get a little catahoula in them or something, they probably can run a little bit further quicker, you know. Yeah. But most of my dogs were a lot of them were pretty fast. Some of them were walker dogs, and so they were sure enough running as fast as they could run. And he would still outrun us. And the dogs would get tired, and then once they get tired, he'll just stay trotting in front of them, and you can't make them stop.
So then, that's how you ended up with the Jaguar.
Yeah, that night I killed, but I didn't really tell you what all happened. Soon as he went off the hill, soon as he turned his head, he didn't let us have time to shoot him. He just turned his head, looked at us just an instant, and then turned right off the hill and went down a big canyon, or in a little canyon, had a little side canyon. So I rode down, but by then, all the dogs was there, because them all the real tired ones got back together. So then I had all the dogs with us then, and so there was probably 12 or 14 dogs. I'm not sure exactly how many, but there was probably 12 or 14 with the two packs. And so then he ran off the hill, and he got in like a little bitty deep canyon. And some reason I went below him first, and I started walking up the little creek below him, and I thought I wasn't even thinking. So I started walking up towards him, and he was just buried up right in a little creek, just right on the bank.
Was he growling? Did they make a lot of noise?
He was doing everything he could do because there was a lot of dogs right around him. So then I started up towards him, but it was dark, you know. But it was moonlight. It was real moonlight. So you could kind of see stuff a little bit. And I still had my little light, but it would shine about 20 foot. But so I still had my little light, but then I was going to walk up from the bottom side of him, and then I got to thinking, no, that dang thing can jump on me. So then I thought, I'll get on the side of the little creek on the opposite side of him, and then I'll just shoot across. But that sounded good, but he turned and then ran down the canyon, and it was real close to the bottom, a little forks. And then when he got to the forks, he just turned up the canyon, running, trying to go up the canyon, but then the dogs, and it wasn't far, you know, so I just run down there and followed him up. But it wasn't far to the bottom. Then he turned up the other canyon, and then by then he was tired, and the dogs went ahead and grabbed him. And he bit a couple dogs, hurt a couple dogs pretty bad. But anyway, when they were grabbing him, and he was not, you know, he was already tired, and they was starting to grab him. I just shot him with the pistol in the head.
You got right up close to him?
Yeah, I just went real close to him so that all the dogs was around him. And it was nighttime, so I just put real close to him so it didn't hit one of my dogs.
How big was he?
He weighed 137 pounds. But I had all of the stuff out of his stomach because I chased him so many times. So he was hungry.
He didn't have any clump beef in him?
Not by then. He might have had a few hairs left in him, but he didn't have no meat, I can tell you.
So he was living in this country then. He was staying up here.
Oh, yeah. He stayed there. He liked it around the Dos Cabezas. And he did go as far as immigrant in the Chiricahuas. I don't know how far south he was really going into the Chiricahuas, but he stayed on our country a whole bunch because we've seen a lot of times where he killed cows, and I don't think I ever seen him kill a cow, but if they weren't about 600 pounds or 300 to 600, he wouldn't want to kill them.
If they were too big, huh?
No, if they were too little, he wouldn't want to waste his time.
Oh, if they were too little.
It was a show off.
Yeah, he wanted to grab his teeth and use them up a little bit.
How old do you think he was?
I don't think he's old. I think he was like probably 7 or 8, probably, just by the teeth. He was probably his prime of life, you know. Could have been 6 or 7. His old teeth was real long, and they were real sharp, too. They hadn't been worn down any or anything. So he probably was 6 or 7, and then that way he could run good, you know. He was in probably perfect shape and the strongest he could be.
But they always say, do you think there's breeding females in this country at all?
I don't think so.
Well, so far, all they've ever documented was males.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They usually
have
say
a bigger
it's a,
circle.
A wandering male that's wandered in here.
Yeah, that's so far what they've. Only thing they've been able to show is males. They took some pictures of a big, great big male, and they said, and someone said, I heard him say, oh, it could be a female. I said, yeah, it could be, but I said, nobody will believe it. Because you could see the old head was that big and had big shoulders. So it had to have been a male.
Yeah. Well, so, that's good.
So far, but they do have it on the endangered species now. Whenever I killed the jaguar, it really wasn't on the endangered species. Because they really didn't even have it a species then. So it was really where it would be like they tell you if it was elephant. But it could be anything that's not on the species list. But so it really wasn't a species in the United States. And it since that jaguar, and that's probably the last jaguar that we know of that anyone has killed now in the United States. And they got it on the endangered species now, I think. In the courtrooms, all they could say on my jaguar is that anyone knows that spotted one's got to be illegal. So that's what they use for defense on it. But I really think they should give me back my jaguar because
well, you had a lot of investment in beef.
Yeah, I had a lot of investment in beef, and then I had some of my dog's pads were run off. but the jaguar, it really wasn't species, and it really wasn't law that said it was illegal. Yeah. It really wasn't illegal. They say it is, and they'll always tell you it is, but the truth of the matter, it isn't.
Since you've been around for so long, had you heard rumors of other people that had caught, besides Warner Glenn, we all know he caught some later on, or caught a couple.
Yeah.
And have you heard rumors of other people prior to this? I mean, a long time ago, historically.
Yeah, a long time ago. I'm pretty positive Sewell Goodwin. So
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure Sewell.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, and I'm pretty positive Sewell Goodwin caught one. And then I'm not sure who else, but there's been like two or three people that I know has killed a jaguar.
And Sewell, and he had there was a Mexican boy or man that hunted with him, wasn't there?
Yes, but I can't remember what his name was. But he probably was with him. I'm not sure. I don't even remember exactly how that went.
Yeah. But he caught him over here in Arizona, didn't he?
I think down by Fort Huachuca. Wasn't that where you saw?
I think so. I read about it, or they interviewed Sewell, and Bruce Kennedy did. Benny, did he say anything about that jaguar in that interview?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
I seen his interview, and I thought that I liked his interview really good. I thought they did a good job with
him. Yeah, Bruce did a good job with him. That was him and, what's the guy that lived down here?
Lived where?
Southern Arizona here, old man.
I don't know. Oh, that one old guy. Oh, what the heck's his name? Oh, that old man. I'll think of it in a minute. But
you didn't drink any of that moonshine, did you?
Yeah, I drank some. I think.
You're losing your memory.
That's a different story. We better not go over there.
We better not tell him anything about moonshine. He'll probably think we picked it out of one of these backpacks.
Hey, don't talk about backpacks either.
Man, I tell you what, the trash across the mountain, blankets, panties,
perfume.
We have perfume.
I don't have any idea why those illegals.
Yeah, just illegal.
Illegal immigrants, whatever, carry all that stuff and then they drop it all through the mountains.
Yeah,
anyway. Blankets and coats and shoes and
Barney.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Ollie Barney.
Yeah, that guy was a. Did you know him?
Yes, I know Ollie pretty well. Pretty well, probably as good as anyone. Tim Hawes, my friend up there at Mill Creek, they were real, real good friends, and I hunted with Ollie some because Ollie would always help Lloyd Smith over there in Tucson hunt, and I helped Lloyd and Ollie a few times hunt.
Ollie was a character, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a good old guy. He was tough, and he was tough.
I liked him. I liked that interview with him.
Did you have an interview?
No, I didn't get to, but Bruce Kennedy did.
Oh,
And I shared all those. I put all those on the channel.
So far, I hadn't seen all these. I'd like to. I'll be looking for it.
Yeah,
I'll find it.
And Sewell Goodwin's are two of my favorites, really.
Okay,
I really like the one with Warner and Kelly too.
Yeah, well, of course, Warner and Kelly. They did a good job, or Bruce did a good job. But you could just like when Sewell was talking about running his hounds and everything, you could see the passion that he had in it and how much he loved it. And in the same way, Ollie was just you could tell it didn't matter what he did, he was a intense person.
Yeah, but he wasn't the kind that was, I never seen him get mad, like where he did stuff that wasn't right with the dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
He always treated dogs good and treated horses good and stuff. He was always good for the hunting.
I'll be
he was good. A good hunter. Was it? He did right with his dogs.
So tell us about your, after you killed the jaguar, what kind of rigmarole did you have to go through for all that? I know it was a bit hard on you.
Yeah.
Cost you your seventh son.
Yeah. No, that's the only reason I had the six. I was only going to have two. So that was the part that was the easiest about the whole thing.
He had to have something else to do because he couldn't hunt.
Yeah. No, but soon as they give me that much trouble over the jaguar and stuff, I told them ahead of time. I said, well, thanks, because I said I was only planning to have two boys. And now I'm going to have seven, one for every day of the week. so that one would be hunting every single day. So you know someone's hunting. So now I have six.
But that was, I mean, you went through a lot of
It's a grief. Pain. It was a pain. I had the last judge that we went to was Zapata in Tucson, and he said that no matter what, he was real sick on the stands. He got real sick on the stands, and he said, no matter what, unless I die, we're going to get this over with the last, when it went through the Ninth Circuit. See, we beat them on the first deal, but then they appealed it and took it to the Ninth Circuit. The first court deal with when the other judge and I had a attorney, Gary Spector, and the judge's name was I wish I could think of it right quick, but now I forgot it, but I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, he was the judge that ruled outrageous government conduct against the Game and Fish.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, so he is, and but anyway, he had never been overturned on a ruling, one of his rulings, until ours. And that's the first time he'd ever been overturned on his ruling on the Ninth Circuit, when it went to the Ninth Circuit. The three judges, two of them said that the Game and Fish was in the wrong, but the third one said they were in the wrong, but leave us alone, because, you know, you guys were in the wrong. But two of them thought that the Game and Fish was in the wrong, but they still thought we needed something, you know, can't get away scot-free. So that's why they took it to the Ninth Circuit. But anyway, so that's how that all ended up.
And they took away your hunting rights? And
yes, they took away everything they could take away. They took, like, for as far as guide license and stuff, I can't buy a guide license and stuff like that, probably. But I just been letting the kids do most of the hunt.
Yeah.
I hunt a little bit just for keep my dogs in shape.
Well, didn't they drag you in and out of all of this for about 7 years, John?
Yeah, it was close to 7 years total. That's what that when I was going to tell you, old Zapata said, this is almost holding a record for the longest court case.
Really?
Yeah, that's why he said, no matter if I'm sick, and he was sick, he said, we're going to get this thing done.
What? So in today's time,
Bilby, other attorney was Judge Bilby, the one that ruled outrageous government conduct against
the other
Fish.
Judge, yeah.
Yeah, the other judge. That's the first judge, and his name was Judge Bilby. But anyway, somehow or other, he died before the Ninth Circuit went. it went before the Ninth Circuit. So he had already died before that happened.
So if a person was branching in this country now, or and they had something like that killing their calves, what, I guess you'd have to call a government trapper, or what would you do?
Yeah, we call the game wardens.
Call the game wardens. Let them
tell them, hey, come get your cat. It's being bad.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how you can do. That's kind of a bad deal.
I bet that'd be hard.
It's kind of a bad
deal. Now these people are going to have to deal with all these wolves up north and everything.
Yeah, that's kind of the same reason that the jaguars are here too, because they're wanting to keep us guys from having as many calves.
Well, they kind of want a lot of people off the land, don't they?
It's partly the truth of the matter, but you can't really say that to them, because they always tell you they're trying to help us out.
Yeah.
They don't finish the sentence.
Do
help you out of the area.
Do they help you much, or?
Oh, I don't really know. They seem like they're trying to a little bit. The game and fish is trying to, I don't know. They're supposed to be able to give you some of your money back if you can prove that the jaguar ate your calves and stuff.
Yeah.
I think there's supposed to be some kind of a little
compensation.
Yeah, compensation that you can get back.
That'll be a hard one to prove, wouldn't it?
Probably. I don't know exactly if you've seen them and have one of these cameras or something, you might could say, yep, here he is. Look, eating my calf.
Yeah. Do they come? I mean, but when he killed a calf, how often did he come back to him? So it got
He would come back a lot. He'd come back and he'd, like I told you, he ate them up pretty well. So he didn't just waste them. He a lot of times he'd kill big ones, but that's just so he'd have it for a little longer time, probably. Wow. And then he liked to kill big ones just because it kind of gives him a little thrill, probably.
More meat on the table.
Yeah, just a little thrill, because you think, a little baby calf, you think, nah, that didn't give me no challenge. So probably want to keep his muscles strong.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a really, really neat story.
Well, we're talking about things that get in the way of your ranching. And riding around, we can't ride anywhere that we don't see, like you were talking about, all of the paraphernalia, the left behind from the illegals crossing through the country. You ever find anything that they've done that would hurt your livelihood? Or
the main thing, it's not intentional. It's not really intentional. The people that carrying all that junk with them isn't intentional. They leave it there, but every cow, about, I don't know how many cows, but a lot of the cows will go eat that dang stuff. Every backpack, you'll see every one of them been chewed on. Every plastic bag's been chewed.
You got a bunch of stoned cows out there?
Yeah, you get some that gets too much plastic in their belly, and then they have a hard time living.
Oh.
A lot of these cows, and I can tell you, this is not like telling you just a story, but if you ever see a dead cow where it's been dead, and just look around there, I'll bet you any amount, you can almost feel half a wheelbarrow full of plastic or backpacks or gloves. They're real, real bad to eat, gloves. And them cows will
eat. Is that why you pick up all the gloves that we come across?
I try to keep one for the next day, because it seems like I go through one a day. I lose them. So that's the only reason I pick up the gloves.
Yeah, it's amazing the trails that they have beat out through this country. The illegals, the illegal immigrants. I don't know what the proper term is, but
like I was telling you, like for them, every one of them little trails, think of how many times someone with a flat foot has to walk over it to get it flat, and all the grass is wore out.
Oh, they're beat out. I mean, just beat out.
Just like the cattle would do over years and years.
Yeah, but the cows, they press in the dirt a lot more. So for them little trails to be beat out like they are, that's a lot of foot people.
It's good for us, because we can ride around in it and find our way around. It
saved us a couple times.
Yeah, yeah.
But
anyway, what else, Benny?
Don't just sit there and be another pretty face.
No, no. Yeah, that's not going to worry.
Yeah.
The first time I ever heard John, Richard Dickerson and his family were living with me and my family in the 80s. Dickerson was getting a house built for himself in Phoenix. And he was just getting started hunting lions. And he was talking to John. Dickerson was a lot like me, like I am now. If I want to meet somebody, I went and found him.
You just looked him up.
Yeah,
I know that about you.
Yeah, and that's how Dickerson was. And he wanted to find everybody that was a top quality hunter so that he could pick their brain and maybe get some dogs. And the first time I ever heard John was you called Dickerson's number, and he had it call forwarding to my house before he canceled his house and everything where he was living. And you called and I answered the phone, and you said, "Hey, this is John Klump. I'm looking for Rick Dickerson." Mm-hmm. So that was the first time, and it was in the mid-80s. And then sometime shortly thereafter, you sold him a dog.
Yeah.
Dandy. And yeah. She was absolutely a dandy. I can tell you that Rick was living with me, and so pretty regular, we'd just bug out and go hunting. And on a Sunday, Rick knew of somebody had killed a lion, a female lion, up on Pine Mountain, north of Phoenix, up there by Dugas. And so he said, "Hey, let's just run up there and look around." And he had that dandy dog. Was the first time he had her out.
Yeah.
And we got up there on top of Pine Mountain, and there was a little bit of spotty snow here and there. And we could see that female's track, and we knew she was dead. So we didn't see anything else, and we're headed down off the mountain. And that dandy dog, she starts cold trailing, but she's going down towards where we were parked at Nelson's place. And Rick says, "Oh, I don't know anything about that dog. I just bought her from John. And we'll just let her be. She's going the right way. Just let her have fun." And we came, there were a bunch of fingers that came fed down into that canyon. We were right in the bottom, headed back. And she's treed right up there. Close enough that Rick says, "Here, hold my mule. I'm going to run up there. She's probably got a skunk." Well, that female had two half-grown kittens up there we didn't know about. And she put those two half-grown kittens up in a dead
tree
hanging out over a bluff. And that was the first I thought, well, I don't know how come you bought that dog so cheap from John Klump, but she is a dandy.
Yeah,
and she caught those two lion kittens. The spots were just about all gone, faded out, and put them both in one tree.
Yeah,
well, you've sold quite a few dogs down in New Mexico to that Tony Rivera.
Yes, the
jaguar hunter.
Yeah, the jaguar hunter. He called not long ago, but he called you too, I think.
Yeah.
But I sold him a lot of quite a few dogs. I probably sold him probably 10 or 15 since I was hunting and selling him dogs. I hadn't sold him any dogs for a while because I haven't had any dogs yet, and I haven't been training as many dogs. I just have a few dogs that I like, and I just keeping them.
What he told me, he said he tried a lot of dogs from different places. He said, but he really liked the dogs he got from you.
Yeah,
he said he really liked those.
Yeah, one time I could tell you Tim, a friend of mine, he wanted to kill a jaguar real, real bad, so he wanted. So Tony, he'd run out plumb out of dogs. He, one of them big male jaguars, killed all his dogs. So Tony called and said, "Hey, if you'll bring us two dogs down, then we'll give you a free jaguar hunt." And so Tim said, "Okay." So we went down there, but he wanted to bring three so he could pick out the two he wanted. So anyway, they were all three pretty good ones, but one dog, we didn't like him very good. He was, I don't know, he was good. He was cold trail, but man, he fiddled around too much, you know. He wasn't pushing as much as we like him. So then when we stayed there like 2 weeks before, it took us a week getting down and doing all our stuff, and then we stayed on it about a week. by foot when we ended up catching a jaguar down in the jungle with them three dogs. And then, but when the airplane, we both got on the airplane, man, we was wanting to come home then. We thought, man, we got to get home. So both were on the airplane, and then dang if there, someone come and say, hey, you can't take your dog. So they thought we was getting off the plane, but we said, no, you bring the dog when you get ready, because we're not getting off.
We're going.
So we just stayed on the plane.
Yeah.
And then they sent the dog in a couple of weeks. So we got our dog back.
What was it like hunting in that jungle?
It was pretty good, but it was Tim, there, they always had about six Mexican guys in there with machetes, and they would trim the trail. And when we finally caught the jaguar, my friend old Tim Hawes, he thought he would just take a shortcut, because he thought he was in a hurry, you know, he wanted to get to it real quick. So the guys trimming the trail, they was already there. We probably went there for 10 minutes before Tim got there. And Tim made it there, but I'm not sure if he went ahead and gave up, went back and got on the trail or not, but he was 10 minutes slower than the rest of us.
I'm supposed to go down there. I'm trying to go down there and interview and talk to Tony.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's called me a couple of times, and I'm trying to figure out how I can get down there. Because I don't think he can come to the United States, can he?
I don't know. He used to always come. He used to come up. Sometimes he'd come up and get to pick up the dogs, and then he could haul them almost cheaper that way than just sending them on the plane. So for a while, I know he's coming up here, but I don't know why he can't come now.
I don't know. I think he got in a little trouble or something happened, but now he's working. He's working to help do the study or something with the jaguars down there where he can catch them, and they can collar them or whatever and study them, do whatever they do in those deals.
Oh, yeah. But, okay. Perfect.
Okay, before that your, what was that dog? What's the dog's name? Lila?
Yes. That's the one walker dog.
How old is she?
She's probably about six or seven.
Well, what, if you were going to sell a dog like that, what do you think it'd take?
I don't know. When I was selling them, I'd probably sell her for around $4,000 or $5,000 when I was selling them. Whenever I was young and I sold my first dog, man, I forget. Oh, yeah, the very first dog I sold was that little walker female to my friend, old Bruce Bull. And some reason, he drew me down $100. I asked him $1,000. So I got a $900 from him. And then the next one was old Sally, that big walker female. And Ron Moore up there in Young, Arizona, talked me out of her. And I got $2,000. And so then I thought, man, I'm moving up in the world on these dogs. I got 2,000. And so then the little black female, I think I ended up selling her for three. So when I got to three, I thought it was a record. So most of the time, later on, I was getting like 4,000 and 5,000 for pretty nice dogs.
And that was what year?
Oh, probably like 88 to 90s, you know, around 1990, probably.
So those same dogs right now are probably worth 12 to 15.
Yeah, probably, just because that's what a lot of the people that are selling them now, they ask quite a lot of money. You know, they probably for sure ask $10,000 for
at least
a piece.
Yeah, they're
more than that.
Yeah, a dog like her, we rode through whitetails and javelinas and no lion tracks for 2 days, and then she opened up on that track up there, and it was old. And that's that. It's hard to get a dog like that.
She's a nice dog. She wants to catch game. She's there. She isn't really the kind that likes to cold trail. You see her today. You could tell when she could smell it. She would jump forward, but she didn't even open because she wasn't thinking. She thought, man, we just gotta go forward.
Yeah, we gotta move it forward, dog. Who was the one who said that?
That's what she was wanting to do.
One of those bobcat hunters.
She was wanting to move it forward.
Well, let me go back to John's family just a little bit. I already bragged on his boys and his grandkids. But I've seen him with his kids and his grandkids, and he treats everybody the same. He's got that quiet way about him. I don't know what would happen if he ever got mad. Would he stomp you with a stick?
He gets mad once in a while.
But he tries
not to.
Just recently you had another grandchild, and you don't have – there's only five of these boys that are involved in having kids right now.
We still
have the youngest one at home waiting to find him a girl.
Yeah, but he's waiting. He has one in Oklahoma, but the girl said that she knows that she's from Arkansas. She knows she wouldn't get to see her mama very often. So she said she better just see him while he's there.
There you go.
So I told her that's probably a wise decision.
But you just had another grandchild for you. So what are we at, John?
We have 17 now. I have 17 grandchildren, and I was seven and seven. I thought, man, I'm holding out good. But the last three was girls, so now I'm 10 and seven. So
yeah, but how blessed is that?
That's pretty good. But that's why I was going to tell you that they're all close to the same age. The oldest one is like 11, and then they go down, and most of them are around between 0 and about 4. So most of them are all little guys. But that's why I wanted to have you do this little video and stuff. So the grandkids, they'll be really thankful to have it later on, probably. I hope so. Okay. And they'll have a little thrill, I hope, that they either might.
Look at Papa.
Yeah, they'll say, oh, there's Papa.
Cool.
And so that's why. That's why the video will be fun.
That you got anything else you want to say or anything you want to talk about?
I don't really know of anything. I think can you put that little bit about old Warner being my first guy that I hunted with that?
Sure. We'll tell the story.
Yeah. Well, the taco story.
Yeah.
My goodness.
The taco story.
Yeah.
You might put that in because he was about the first guy
Look at that and see if it's still on? Just look in the viewfinder.
He was right there,
little screen. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Rolling, John. You're hot.
Okay.
We're making you the director now.
But anyway, he was the first guy that I ever really had that went with me. And we ended up catching, we caught a mama. And a couple kittens, I think, the one time that I was with him, the first time I was with him.
This Marvin, Warner's dad.
Yeah, but Warner was with him, too. It was Marvin and Warner together, and then they had a hunter with him. And but Warner and Marvin both were there. Warner could get around really good them days, because I was young. I was probably like 14, close around 14, that's what Warner was telling me the other day. And so I was about 14. I thought it was kind of, okay, but I didn't really know how to run and keep up with people. And old Warner, he left me.
He's long-legged.
Yeah, I got down there, but I should have, if I had known how to listen, then I could probably found him down the canyon. But I couldn't really hear the dogs, and then I couldn't see Warner. So I just waited for the other guys, and then I got back on my horse and rode down to the tree where we had a female across the it was a little tree that just hung out over the canyon, but it wasn't big, but it's really a pretty tree that where the female had just was laying right on the limb, just maybe 8 foot off the bottom of the canyon, but the tree just hung out over the canyon. So it's really pretty. Pretty picture, and that's the tree that I would go by once in a while if I had a bad days and hadn't caught anything. I'd get a little bark off of it or the leaves, think I was going to get good luck. And and then the taco deal, that's another thing that I used to think would help my luck, is Warner and Marvin, one time we was going up a ridge and it was hot. It wasn't hot. It was cold wheat, but it was about noon, and we hadn't found anything to trail. So we was just riding up a ridge, and then we got off at 8 and some tacos. So they gave me some tacos, and since then, I would always say, oh, them tacos are good luck, so I'd eat tacos a lot. But
whatever helps. I'll guarantee you, in this dry environment, in this rocky deal, whatever helps.
So anyway, that's what we did with Thor Warner and Marvin.
Have you hunted with them quite a bit over
not
the years?
Not too very much. Not very much. We went and caught a big tom not long after the female and the kitten.
But you ate tacos before you caught him.
I don't know if we had tacos, but we caught a big tom with him once, too. But the tom had killed a calf, and so we got him from, you know, off of a calf kill.
Yeah.
So, but we still was a pretty nice tom, big tom, for I thought it was real, real big. And I still think he's fairly big, even after I know how big he was. I think he was fairly big. He probably weighed 110 or 20 pounds. Probably.
Is that a big, pretty big in this country?
It's fairly big. So far, all the lion that I've ever killed, I weighed the one that I thought was the heaviest. And the one that I thought was the heaviest I weighed, but it was really drawn up. He has not had any food, you know, or hadn't killed anything. Belly. So his belly was empty, just like the jaguar. But the biggest lion that I know that I thought was the biggest, and I'm pretty sure he's the biggest I ever killed, he weighed 147 pounds. And my jaguar weighed 137. And that was, but the tom was, he was big. He should have weighed more. He could have got to 170 if he had a full belly.
On the jaguar, the jaguar's foot compared to a lion's foot, is it so much bigger, or could you tell?
I don't think they're that much bigger. I always thought they were, but I don't think they're a lot bigger. They just seem like they're more square. The toes seem like they're not,
they don't have an arc in it.
They don't have, they got more, like straighter across the toes, and then I think the toes are bigger around, like they're bigger round.
They still have more. The three lobes in the back?
Yeah, they do, but I don't think they have as much of that little V in the back of the foot. Mm-hmm. I think that V doesn't show up as good.
No.
It's what I think. And I think the back pad is bigger, you know. I think the pad is bigger in the back. But that's the only way I think to tell you if it's a jaguar track or a lion track.
Well, one thing's for certain. According to Bruce Bull, there's no chance.
That was a jaguar.
Yeah, he says there's no way it's a jaguar.
But their heads are huge, though, aren't they?
Yeah, their heads are big, and then their teeth are a lot bigger, you know. They're made for, you know, killing bigger animals and stuff. I think that they like water, too, because I've seen places where they killed alligators,
Yeah, or those caimans.
Yeah, I seen them killing an alligator, so I said, them guys like water. I think they like water a lot more than a lion. I never seen many lions that really liked water that I thought they, you know, went and played in the water. But I think a jaguar would probably play in water and kind of think it's fun.
I'll be dang. Well, anything else? I think we covered everything.
You want to talk about tacos?
Well, we got the taco deal.
We got the taco deal.
And I'm going. And when I get home, I'm going to go buy me some tortillas.
I thought it was important that we knew about John's family because they are a good bunch of folks.
Is it a taco when it's folded in half, even if it's a flour tortilla?
It's got to be, because that's what we've been eating lately.
We might better fold it differently, huh?
Yeah, we might better run to town and get some corn tortillas so they know for sure it's a taco.
But if you roll a corn tortilla, then it's a flauta, or it could be a rolled taco.
It on where you are.
It could be a rolled
different
taco.
Different places in Mexico call everything.
But if you roll a flour tortilla, it's a burrito.
Yeah, that's the way it is. But the ones that we had were the hard-shelled tacos, the ones that looked like tacos.
I'm glad you cleared that up for us.
They had a little plastic containers they carried in to set them tacos in. So when you pull them out, they were just like brand-new tacos.
After all this time, he's finally telling us the error of our ways.
He didn't want us to know the secret.
And now everybody's going to know across the globe.
I might be able to go home and catch a lion now.
Okay.
Only if it came from this part of the country.
Yeah.
This is close to Mexico. Mexican lions eat tacos.
That's it.
That might be what it is.
Mm-hmm. But all right. Well,
okay.
I think we got it. I mean, I enjoyed that. You told as good a story about the Jaguar as anybody. I mean, that was super informative.
Okay.
That was good.
Yeah, I told you about all that I remembered. I can't think of anything else that I forgot on the way. So I told you pretty close. I even told you the mountains, you know, where the people can find out exactly what your government peak is and like the Dos Cabezas. But that's where I did trailed him the most around the Dos Cabezas. Is where he was.
Do you think to the Jaguar? Was he coming out of Mexico regular? Or?
I think once he was there, I think he stayed there. I don't think he ever went back. Oh. I think he was there to stay. I don't know what he was going to do about finding him a female, but he. I don't know why he was thinking.
Maybe he was just. Maybe he was like a monk or celibate or something. A confirmed bachelor.
He might have been some reason he was.
Hey, I wonder if jaguars could breed with mountain lions.
I don't know.
Me and Benny were talking about that.
Somebody was telling me, they tried to tell me that the black ones are half a mountain lion, but I said, I don't think that's the case. I think the black ones are just black, but because they still have the spots.
Yeah, they still have the rosettes on them.
And I think they can still. They'll still cross with the yellow ones, too. So I think that they're the same as a yellow one.
You know, one thing's for certain. When people start talking about things they don't know and speculating and act like they know, it doesn't take very long to find out who's a fool.
But oh, no kidding.
Follow them. They get on them their internets and find out too much stuff. They think that is always the sure thing. If it says that, they believe it.
That's true.